The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert LLC.
This is a Roundtable Rewind.
Man, oh man, oh man. LeBron just didn't have it from the get-go. Everyone talking about him being fatigued. And Lance, one thing is for sure. Defense was the calling card last night for both of these teams, but it was the Celtics defense that took away one of the greatest players in NBA history. The numbers still look okay for LeBron at 26 points and 10 rebounds and 5 assists, but turnovers were up and just a big flow of the game for LeBron never really happened.
Yeah, I don't get it for the Cavaliers. They just, when they go into Boston, and you got to give Brad Stevens and the Celtics credit because they are playing great defense to hold Cleveland 83 points. And Cleveland, you know, the calling card a lot of times for the Cavaliers is hitting those perimeter shots, 9 of 34 behind the arc, but they play with zero energy. And I just don't understand in a game five, and we looked night and day for this stat, and I finally got it. Teams that win game five in a best of seven go on to win the series 83% of the time. Yeah. So knowing that statistic and how it's so against you, you would just think the Cavaliers would come out and play with more energy. And I thought the supporting cast would be there for LeBron. That was our lock last night. And we were wrong from the get-go because they were basically down double digits the entire game.
I mean, LeBron having a very average night and still at times outscoring the other starters for Cleveland. It was a hot mess for those that were supporting LeBron. But here we go with this debate about fatigue for LeBron. Rockstar, if you will. This is head coach Tyronn Lue, who's asked about fatigue and is it impacting his team. And then LeBron gives his answer afterwards. So everyone talking about, is LeBron's gas tank empty?
No, I don't think so. I think our focus, LeBron's focus, you know, is to win. And that's all we're focused on right now.
But I think everybody at this point is tired, or, you know, worn down or whatever the case may be. But, you know, still trying to make plays to help our team win, put us in position to win. And we had moments. We had an opportunity, but we didn't make enough plays.
Did they have moments? I mean, how close were they at any point? Was there ever a point in that game last night you thought, oh, the Cavaliers are going to win this thing?
Early on, maybe. I mean, in the first 5 minutes of the game, Dunaway, when any team and every team seems like they're in an NBA game. Look, I mean, fact is he's 33, but he's an old 33. He's had maybe, arguably, the best postseason we've ever seen him play, having to single-handedly carry this Cavalier team on his back, but he's played more minutes than any other player this postseason at 648 minutes. Wednesday's game was his 98th game of the season. His career high in games played is 100 in a season, and that was in the 2010-2011 season, which included an NBA Finals that went six games, so he's logging a ton of minutes. But I don't think you get to this point and you say tired and fatigued. Those can't be themes coming out of game five. LeBron is too good. You've got to have the extra energy to be able to carry you here.
Body language so important in these playoffs so far. You can almost see from the get-go how a game's going to go. We've seen these blowouts throughout another 13-point game last night for the Celtics, and it really never felt that close to me, especially in the second half. It never felt like a Celtics loss was in the arena last night as LeBron and them had to fight back just to keep it that close. You see what I'm saying? There's almost the start of every game. You almost can get a read on how the night's going to go. Even in the Western Conference, rarely, only the other night when the Rockets came back, did you not have a feel at the beginning of the game how it was going to go. This has been such a predictable Eastern and Western Conference finals so far.
Yeah, I had somebody call me out last night, and they were like, why do you like the Cavs? And I said, I believe the Cavaliers are going to come to play tonight. And it's like everybody's figured this thing out. Just play the home team. At least in the Eastern Conference. I mean, this has been the flow of the entire series. And I fully expect Cleveland, as tired and fatigued as they are, to go back to Cleveland in game six and win that game.
I do too, because the Celtics, as good as they've been at home, 10-0, they have been that bad on the road.
Yeah, 1-6 on the road right now in the postseason. That's not going to win you a championship. The crazy thing is you go 11-0 at home, you're in the NBA Finals, and no one gave this Celtic team a chance. I really believe Milwaukee in round one would take them seven games, which they did, and I thought Milwaukee would ultimately win that series, and Jason Tatum has played out of his mind. I've been screaming it from the mountaintops that this guy is going to ultimately be the Celtics' best player, even when Kyrie comes back and when Gordon Hayward comes back. But when you get all of these guys back together for the Celtics, just imagine the future for this organization.
Jason Tatum stole the show last night, but everyone talking LeBron.
I think the NFL did the right policy. I think if you're on the field, you stand, and if you want to make a statement, then you stay in the locker room.
I will always stand for the national anthem. And I have taught my kids to stand for the national anthem. And what amazes me, though, in the stands is some people who give it a half-hearted effort.
People on their cell phones.
Yes.
I mean, just no. I've always been taught to be at attention for that moment.
That's right.
Any other time during the game, you do whatever you want.
So cell phone. Now, I know it becomes a show at these sporting events. So now you've got the national anthem, but sometimes you have fireworks going off or you have the flyovers going on. So then all of a sudden, now you've got people pulling out their smartphones and they're trying to catch videos of the fighter jets flying over Talladega or at a Super Bowl, and there's fireworks going off or there's, you know, something huge going on the field, and now you're trying to capture that moment on your phone, which I personally, and I've done it once or twice myself, but I personally find that, you know, in the way the president is talking today and the way the NFL was describing yesterday, I sort of find that to be, you know, disrespectful. I should be standing at attention and looking at the flag and really pondering my freedom and thinking about those who have sacrificed for it and everything we're giving in the country. So I see a lot of disrespect, not just on the field where the players are using it as a platform, but in the stands as well. For instance, LT, and I saw a couple of players making this point yesterday, people in line buying concessions. You know, the concession line doesn't stop.
Of course not. They want to make their money.
Yeah, it doesn't stop for the national anthem. It should.
Yeah, look, it's
not. If we're going to hold the players to this level, the fans should be held to that level too.
I mean, for me, if over at SunTrust in the bottom of the seventh, if you can stop serving me a cold beer, I think you can stop for 3 or 4 minutes during the national anthem.
They cut you off in the seventh inning for safety.
Alcohol sales. Yeah, for safety for everybody else. Well, if you want to, for a sign of respect, just pause for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, it's just 2 minutes. Just 2 minutes.
So I would agree with you.
Here's the commissioner, Cut 5 rock star Roger Goodell, yesterday, and he got a question at the post news conference when the NFL came up with their national anthem policy. And if you missed it yesterday, it requires every NFL personnel who's on the field during the national anthem to stand, or the team will be fined. You do have the option to stay in the locker room. And here is Roger Goodell. Got to ask a pretty interesting question on who actually decides who's being respectful or disrespectful.
Who's the arbiter of respect for the flag? What would be considered disrespect for the flag and the anthem? And why would the league and the owners kind of willingly attempt to police something that is subjective like this?
Well, I think the general public has a very strong view of what respect for the flag is in that moment. We have language in our policy that talks about that, standing at attention with hats off and focused. And I think the general arbiter will be the clubs and the league, and we'll work with our players and get their viewpoint also.
That's the commissioner yesterday. Listen, you have the right in this country to voice your opinion.
Yeah, but they're part of the NFL. They're wearing the NFL. They're wearing different organizations' uniforms. They want them to stand at attention, then they got to stand at attention.
I thought the NFL dropped the ball on this. I know you think they nailed it. I thought they dropped the ball on this. I think college football gets it right.
You're talking about keeping them in the locker room?
Yeah, I think they should.
But the problem now is this has become such a big divide and such a big subject. If you pull them in the locker room, then it's basically telling everyone that wants to, you know, show whatever side they're on, they can't actually do it. Because now they're forced to stay in the locker room.
So you're saying freedom of speech, you go ahead and protest.
Basically, anybody that doesn't come out now, you know that they're protesting.
Something to keep an eye on. You thought it was going to be a 2017 issue. It will continue into 2018.
And that blows me away, by the way.
The NFL Players Union not happy because they felt like they were not part of this process. in coming up with a solution on the national anthem policy. That from the NFL yesterday, and interesting quotes from the president today about having to stand proudly, and if you don't do that, maybe you shouldn't be in the country, something that will become a more divisive topic after those comments later on today. Richie Incognito has been, I don't want to say most hated players in the NFL, but he has never been, you know, he's never going to win Mr. Congeniality in the NFL.
Yeah, look, he played for my Rams for years, and I told Brown when he went to his Dolphins, this guy is a walking personal foul. He makes some of the dumbest penalties at the worst time possible during some of the games. And to me, he was always kind of a crazy guy on the field.
And he was retired, but he's decided to come out of retirement, and his NFL team is making sure his mind is right as he comes back out of retirement.
Yeah, the Buffalo Bills, well, the former Buffalo Bill, Richie Incognito, is being held for involuntary psychiatric evaluation after an altercation at a Florida gym. I didn't see exactly what happened at this Florida gym, but for them to take you to a psych ward, I would assume things escalated and got to a point that was pretty bad.
And for the other side of the coin in a different sport is Lenny Dykstra. And he's in the news as well on a day that Incognito is getting mentally checked out before he tries to re-enter the league. Lenny Dykstra, as you heard Buster said, has always been a character, and then he went off the rails again this week.
Lenny Dykstra, I mean, I don't know how you felt about watching him play. I loved watching him play for the Phillies in the early 90s.
Oh, absolutely.
He was one of the fieriest players out there, but at 55, he has been charged with making terroristic threats and a number of drug offenses after allegedly threatening an Uber driver while in possession of drugs. So gets in the car, tells the Uber driver he wants to change the destination. I've done this before. Have you ever done that?
Yes. In fact, I've done it many times. You start going one place, somebody calls you and say, hey, we're not there anymore. We've gone here. So let's go this way. If I got to throw you some extra cash, I will.
And it's normally never a problem, but according to NJ.com, the Uber driver declined to change destination, and that's when Lenny Dykstra pulled out a gun. And according to the Uber driver, pointed it at his head and threatened to kill him.
Okay, that's a little overboard.
The man then sped into a parking lot next to the Linden police station, honked his horn, and fled the vehicle. According to police, they did not find a gun, but they did find cocaine, marijuana, and ecstasy. They took him into custody at 3:30 a.m. Eastern Time. After he was arrested, he went to Twitter. Did you see what he tweeted out?
I did not.
You tell me if you know where this poetry comes from. The tweet was, but I got to keep cruising. Can't stop, won't stop moving. It's like I got this music in my mind saying it's going to be all right.
Wow.
He's doing lyrics?
He did a little T-Swift, Shake It Off.
Oh, my.
So, I mean, he's officially going crazy.
He is tweeting Taylor Swift lyrics.
Yeah, Rockstar, me and Rockstar are both Howard Stern listeners, and he's a regular on Howard Stern.
Oh, he's a regular.
They did it embedded with him where one of the Stern's reporters like goes and hangs out with him for a day and a night or whatever, and he's all into conspiracy theories. He thinks the government's tapped into his walls and are listening to him.
Yeah, I mean,
He's
legitimately insane, Dunaway.
He's created like three or four different personalities. When he meets women, he comes up with like, this guy I want to be right now. I want to be a dentist. Watch this. He doesn't have any teeth. He has false teeth.
But he hangs out with attractive women.
Yeah. Him and his friend, they score all the time, they say.
They say.
Yeah. But the government's listening to my conversations through my walls.
When I ask you the craziest athlete of all time, Lenny Dykstra aside, or is he in the conversation?
Well, I think he's got to be in the conversation now. I mean, he's really building a resume that's going to be up there with some of the other crazies that we've seen. I mean, one guy that jumps out to me, he was at one particular, it's a sad story, Brian Williams with the Nuggets, and then he went to Bison Dele, and then he ends up getting shot between the eyes and dumped over a boat. But, I mean, he was insane when he was on the court. And then, obviously, you know, that went off the court as well.
To me, the craziest guy, and that we've actually now been in the room with him a couple of times, when he was playing and near the end, was John Rocker, for me, with the Atlanta Braves. And I just wonder how close to the crazy train you have to be a relief pitcher sometimes. See, he sort of used that to his advantage coming out of the bullpen.
I thought Rocker was just really outspoken and kind of dumb in ways and just a little immature. I don't know. I think a lot of Rockers might have been an act.
You think some of that was an act?
Yeah, like
he became a character.
Dykstra's legitimately insane. I think Incognito has a lot of the traits to be insane. I think Kyle Turley was close to being insane for a little bit.
Dennis Rodman.
Rodman is kind of insane. I would agree with Rocky there. Alonzo Spellman was a guy that didn't he barricade himself in a house and shoot at police? The old defensive end.
Yeah, you're
the Chicago
Bears. You're going criminal is what you're doing.
Well, and I mean, you got to be a
you're
little crazy.
You're going criminally insane.
Well, yeah. I mean, to barricade yourself inside and start shooting at police, I mean, that seems a little crazy. To put a gun to an Uber driver's head seems a little crazy.
Yeah, I mean, those are criminal acts of terrorism. Yeah, absolutely. You're not talking about just sports crazy like John McEnroe. You're talking about legitimately.
Yeah, I'm talking about legitimately crazy. I mean, we can do this either direction. But
see,
I
thought you, when you said, give me some players that were some of the craziest players or athletes of all time, I thought you meant like the John Rockers, Dennis Rodman, John McEnroe, Ron Artest of the world.
Well, I think, I mean, it's amazing how many like legitimately criminal crazies. Lawrence Phillips, I mean, choked out his cellmate. I mean, that wasn't long ago, right? I mean, he drug his girlfriend down the steps by her hair. He tried to run over some 16 and 17-year-old boys playing a pickup football game. And then eventually he killed his cellmate. I mean, so there are legitimately, you know, really good athletes that have turned crazy.
Some of the craziest rolling around right now is Lenny Dykstra. 12 after on the show, you know, Mike Tyson is a guy I was thinking about.
I would say
well.
Tyson was crazy, yeah.
I even, you know, there's times John Daly, I thought, who's just in town, was a little, you know, 51 cards. Not a full deck, but...
Would you say not, T.O.? But, would you say...
But I never thought John Daly was going to be in the category you're talking about.
No, I wouldn't think that either, but Terrell Owens is kind of crazy, right?
John Daly's crazy fun, you know? Crazy in a fun way. John Rocker, to me, was intimidatingly crazy. What a bullpen guy should be, a closer should be. Mike Tyson, though, had that crazy look. I would have never gotten in the ring with him.
So is Rodman more crazy for show like T.O. was?
What made T.O. crazy in your opinion?
I mean, the guy was crying in the locker room about his quarterback, and he was doing sit-ups in his driveway for reporters. I mean, he was a little weird, a little out there.
Yeah, the sit-ups were an agent-driven for show thing. I thought at that time, the crying, I thought that was real emotions after a loss and seeing your quarterback taking the heat. Man,
he seemed a little unstable. I don't think we've ever seen that before. Unbalanced,
absolutely. On Twitter, at Jocks Roundtable, jump in with us. Phone calls as well, 834-9450. Four Downs coming up a little bit later on this hour. We'll talk to Wimp Sanderson. I'm not tying this to Wimp being crazy, but Wimp Sanderson, 9 o'clock as well, a little bit later on. Eric writes in, says, it sounds like LT is going with athletes who graduated to bat you-know-what insane, he says.
Hey, there's a good handful of them, and I'm sure we're missing some.
Mason goes, Aaron Hernandez was crazy. Yeah, in a bad way. So too dark of a topic. Some of these are for a drive-in on a happy morning show. Patrick says Lawrence Taylor. Now, Lawrence Taylor was a man-eater on the field. John Randall from the Vikings on the field, crazy. Jose Canseco says Davey.
I think Lawrence Taylor was one of those guys that it started out, he was so intense on the field. I think cocaine kind of melted his brain, though.
First down.
Which of these scenarios is more likely? Year one for Jeremy Pruitt, he wins 7 games, or Nick Saban makes it 5-for-5 in the college football playoff appearances?
Oh, that's tight, Dunaway. I believe Jeremy Pruitt can get to 7 wins from 4 wins last year. I think there is a change in culture. And you heard somebody on record, an SEC coach, saying what a pathetic job Butch Jones did with what was in Knoxville.
Yeah, I attributed that to Athlon. It was actually in Lindy's magazine. I want to get that corrected. Okay. Lindy's magazine yesterday. But it was a horse bleep job that Butch Jones did up there. For me, Lance, this is fairly easy because of Alabama's schedule. I mean, it will take, until they get to Auburn, it will take a pretty big upset, I think, to beat this Alabama team. And I'm not sure the schedule would be there. To me, their first losable game is Auburn, like Auburn beat them last year. Games in Tuscaloosa. And I think it's a better bet that Alabama's in the college football playoff again than it is for Tennessee to get to 7.
You know, normally Nick Saban, although he's had a ton of success, obviously he finds a loss somewhere, but I agree with you. The regular season really seems to open up for Alabama, and you get to the SEC championship, and you just wonder if Alabama could lose in a game like that if they were dominant all year and still find themselves in the college football playoff. Doesn't seem likely, but I'll lean Alabama here, although I think Tennessee might get 7 wins.
I know on a year when you play at Tennessee and at LSU, that's supposed to be a rough schedule, but I don't think LSU is that good, at least this year. To me, Alabama's two toughest games are Mississippi State and Auburn, both of them in November, and both of them at Bryant-Denny.
If I asked you those Tennessee-LSU games right now, better chance those games decided by 14 or more or 7 or less?
14 or more.
I would agree.
Second down.
All right, who has more wins, LSU's quarterback Joe Burrow, new transfer, or Trevor Lawrence?
Dabo went on record and said Kelly Bryant's his guy.
I didn't think that, and I saw that news item, and if you missed it, Clemson released their depth chart. Kelly Bryant's QB1, Trevor Lawrence is QB2.
He's got to be right now, right?
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence hasn't played a game, and Kelly Bryant has, so...
And Kelly Bryant's won a conference championship and got him to a college football playoff, where, by the way, they were the number one seed. I think we all forget Clemson was your number one seed last year.
And Alabama beat him as the number one seed down at the Sugar Bowl.
Third down.
No.
We haven't answered yet.
What's your answer?
I'm going to go Trevor Lawrence. Joe Burrow, I believe, will be the starting quarterback for LSU, but maybe 6 or 7 wins. And I think everything's lining up for Trevor Lawrence to be the guy. I like Kelly Bryant. I think Kelly Bryant can win a ton of games at Clemson, as he did last year. But people are just hyping Trevor Lawrence up way too much. So I think ultimately he's your starter, and I think when he starts, he wins.
I'll agree with you on that. I'll take Trevor Lawrence as well. Rockstar, let's do third down.
More wins over the next 3 years, Nebraska new head coach Scott Frost or the guy who replaced him at UCF, Josh Heupel?
How many years?
3.
So you know UCF is going to have the better year this year, Dunaway,
yeah,
right?
Like 10 wins for UCF this year to maybe 7
yeah,
or 8
6,
for Nebraska.
7, 8, something like that. I do think Scott Frost is going to get this right, Jacob. I really do. I think this is his dream job. I think he's going to bring a lot of passion back to Nebraska. I think they'll get behind it. And in the Big Ten West, outside of Wisconsin, it's kind of wide open. If Northwestern can consistently win 10 games under Pat Fitzgerald, why can't you do it in Lincoln? And I think that's going to be about the number. I'm going to lean Nebraska here.
I'm not. I'm going to take 26 to 25 UCF in 3 years. 26 wins for UCF, 25 for Nebraska. It'll be very close.
I agree. It'll be really tight.
But slightly UCF with more wins over the next 3 years. Probably because of the head start they get this year.
Fourth down.
Same theme, different verse. Mario Cristobal at Oregon or former Oregon head coach Chip Kelly, who's now at UCLA, over the next 2 years. Who has more wins?
Ooh, 2 years.
So last year, UCLA 6-7, Oregon 7-6. To me, Oregon, what they've got coming back with Justin Herbert, that gives them the better year this year. I think Chip Kelly's ultimately going to be the better coach. I'm going to lean Cristobal here. I think Justin Herbert can actually make Oregon one of the surprise teams, and they can win 10 games this year.
I will tell you that Mario Cristobal was a guy that a lot of people, when he was in Tuscaloosa, thought could be a really good head coach again someday. And Oregon may be the right place. He's recruiting well. I'll take Oregon and Mario Cristobal. Occasionally on the show, we like to flash back to some great moments in roundtable history. We call it the Roundtable Vault. Where are we going today, Rockstar?
I'm thinking this is from 2016. You know, it all jumbles in my head. I thought of what if ESPN auditions would sound like, and a couple of famous sports anchors, if they try to audition to be color analysts and stuff like that.
This is their demo tapes when they were trying to make it at ESPN.
See what they sound like.
All right.
The Round Table Vault, 2016.
ESPN Game Broadcasters Auditions. First up, Beth Mowins.
We are live and ready for some football on this lovely Saturday morning. I'm Beth Mowins, and I'm going to overpronunciate every single word you hear today. First and 10 of the offense, the quarterback drops back and launches a pass down the middle, and it's caught. Caught by his receiver and down at the 25. Boy, this has the markings of a fantastic football game at 10 a.m. on a Saturday. It doesn't get much better than this.
Second up, Steve Levy.
I'm Steve Levy, and get used to my voice being pretty much a yell for the entire broadcast. Also, I will be mentioning the ESPN app frequently and saying things like Auburn. Okay, here we go. The offense takes the field and lines up. Auburn needs to get things going quickly in this game. Stidham takes the snap and tries a quick screen pass, and it's incomplete to the receiver. It's like he was running even before he caught it. Not a good first play from Auburn. But what is a good play is downloading the ESPN app. It's only been available since around 2011, but we decided you needed it now. Quick timeout on the feed, and we will be right back to Auburn.
They are pushing it hard.
Yep.
Third up, Larry Culpepper?
Larry Culpepper here, and just in case you weren't tired of this campaign, I'm going to be in this bit too. You know, I invented the college playoff.
Hey, how did you get in the booth?
I have no idea, man. Just quenching everybody's thirst, buddy. I'm calling Dr. Pepper here.
Spot on. That's spot on.
And finally, Gus Johnson.
LT's favorite.
Welcome back to the game. I'm Gus Johnson with my pal Joel Klatt. We are in the middle of the first quarter. Quarterback breaks the huddle and lines up under center. Takes the snap and hands off to the running back up the middle. He's finally taken down after a four-yard gain.
That is spot on.
Wow. They quickly line back up. They're going to snap this one fast. Quarterback takes it. Throws it. Short pass. Oh.
That's
incomplete.
100%.
Third and six. Whoo. How about this game, Joel?
That monkey.
The Round Table Vault 2016.
Larry Culpepper, miss him, man, already. We're going to talk about ESPN.com's story, which I found very interesting because I think perception sometimes is reality and perception sometimes is not reality when it comes to your favorite college football team. The story is strengths of each top 25 team after spring practice going into the year. And we'll use Alabama as the example. They're number one in the rankings. And when I say you give me the strength of Alabama football this year, going into the season, give me the one position on the field you think Alabama is at its better than any other position. The strength of the team is?
I would agree with what they've got from ESPN, and it's running back.
Running back.
I mean, what direction are you going to go here?
I would have said quarterback.
I guess you could go quarterback.
I mean, there are several teams at the top of the food chain, Clemson, Georgia, and Alabama, that seem to have not one but two quarterbacks. And in just the opposite of the old saying that if you've got two quarterbacks, you don't have one. I think at Clemson, Georgia, and Alabama, they legitimately have two quarterbacks.
Well, I'm surprised, and we'll get to Georgia here in a minute. I'm surprised Georgia actually didn't go quarterback with their direction. But when you look at Alabama, I mean, Damian Harris is considered one of the top four or five backs in college football. But Najee Harris, what he did in that second half, that was really, I mean, outside of Tagovailoa, that was kind of the difference in that game.
Yeah, and you forget what Najee did in the national championship game because of the way it ended. And with Tua making the switch coming in for Jalen, got a lot more headlines. But you're saying that Najee went in and...
I mean, he was gashing that Georgia defense.
What a burst of speed there when Georgia was a little tired legs. But you also have depth. Josh Jacobs, the versatile out-of-the-backfield receiver. And then Brian Robinson, who is getting rave reviews. So Alabama's strength is running back.
Yeah, and Brian Robinson was a guy that, you know, when we were down for A-Day, people, I mean, that's all they were raving about was Brian Robinson. And looking at the guy in pads, I mean, he's a beast.
There are people, and I saw this written at Saturday Down South, great website if you want to check it out, Saturday Down South, earlier this week, that compared Alabama's running back success in college to a Mike Leach or Big 12 system quarterback stat line, that when you are evaluating quarterbacks from Mike Leach's system and some of those type systems, that you get skewed of just how talented those guys are because of the system. They become system quarterbacks. We've heard that for a decade or 15 years.
And most of those guys, it doesn't translate to success at the next level. If you start to look at these Alabama running backs, it's kind of hit and miss.
They are saying Alabama's running backs are sort of a system running back by success because of what is underreported, the great offensive lines that they've had in Tuscaloosa. Trent Richardson is the poster boy, if you will, of what they were talking about. They said Trent Richardson's numbers and yards per carry in Tuscaloosa was skewed by the great offensive lines, and all of these running backs that are putting up these huge numbers just doesn't translate to the NFL because Alabama has become almost a running back system of great success with just a core of running backs. Do you believe that or not?
I think there's probably some legitimacy to it, but when you start to look at guys that have gone on to the NFL under Nick Saban from Alabama, I think Glenn Coffey would have had a pretty good career but decided to cut it short.
Became a U.S. Army paratrooper.
Seemed to have a minute with San Francisco. Then you would go Mark Ingram. I mean, his best years were the last 2 years for the New Orleans Saints. So he's had a good, really steady 7 years. Trent Richardson's kind of the outlier to me.
Where do you put Yeldon? Or Eddie Lacy in that conversation?
Okay, so Eddie Lacy had a couple of good years. I think weight has been the biggest problem for Eddie Lacy.
He had one great year.
Yeah, so for me, Eddie Lacy and Trent Richardson, it almost seems self-inflicted. TJ Yeldon, not in the best spot, especially, seemed to be coming on a little bit, and then you go out and you get a guy like Leonard Fournette, who's such a special talent. TJ Yeldon's just going to be used in spots.
Derrick Henry now becomes the feature back in Tennessee.
And he's been good.
He was really good, had a great playoff game last year. So you would say what they're hinting at, that Alabama running back by is the system running back numbers compared to Mike Leach quarterbacks, you would not buy that conversation.
I would not.
Yeah.
I think those guys are that talented. Again, if Trent Richardson, if he was the most dedicated player in the world, how good could he have been in the NFL?
I thought of all the players that have come through Tuscaloosa, the two I thought were slam dunk NFL stars, it was going to be Mark Barron and Trent Richardson.
Well, Mark Barron, he has found a place now.
Yes, with the Rams.
And you wouldn't have thought a former safety that was so dominant in college at that position would be an undersized linebacker that really excels now in Wade Phillips' defense.
But undersized linebacker is perfect for the way they play the NFL right now. But I thought Trent Richardson would be a long-time NFL running
back. I would agree
with
you. Now in the CFL and now not even playing in the CFL.
Yeah, on the suspended list with Saskatchewan. Couple of stats for you. First of all, Auburn in baseball at the SEC baseball tournament at 4:30 today. Rod Bramlett making this point because Auburn's trying to get up to where it hosts one of the regionals. Easier path to get to the super regionals, which gets you to the NCAA World Series out in Omaha. He points out that Auburn baseball right now is 12th in the RPI and now tied for the fourth in the country with most top 50 wins. So a big win yesterday over Ole Miss for Auburn when it comes to their resume about hosting. And now they have Casey Mize on the hill today, 4:30 against Texas A&M. Auburn is set up really good with a win today to be actually hosting in the NCAA regionals, which start, of course, next week. So selection show happening this weekend, but Auburn playing in the SEC tournament, which gets underway in just a few seconds with loser bracket games today out of the gate in the morning session and then 4:30 for Auburn. Another stat to tell you about, though, involves LeBron James. With his back against the wall, LeBron James is actually, you know, he's been a killer when it comes to surviving in the NBA playoffs.
Do you have his record in elimination games?
I am going to pull it up for you. Yes.
Because, you know, the one knock when people talk about Michael Jordan to LeBron James, if we're arguing the greatest ever, a lot of people will talk about, well, Michael Jordan never lost in these championship series. But Michael Jordan, before he ever got to the NBA Finals, did lose in the playoffs quite a few times.
Quite a few times, you say?
Yeah.
I was going to have it for you, LT, but the stats that they had up must have been wrong because ESPN Stats has just pulled it down as I was about to read it.
Yeah, I mean, Jordan lost 85 through 90. So I would say five consecutive postseasons before he actually won a title.
So I apologize for that. I will not have him until the next break.
Yeah.
I will tell you right now, though, NFL football, as we get closer to mandatory camps coming up, you've got four big stars coming off of injuries, four of them. And I'm wondering where you are comfort level for these guys, and I'll go most comfortable they'll come back, bounce back, and have a big year to least comfortable.
You are ready? Two quarterbacks?
Three are quarterbacks and one's a defensive player. You ready?
Yep.
Andrew Luck, Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, and J.J. Watt. So give me the most confident they'll bounce back from a major injury and have a really good year, and give me the least confident, and give me one through four,
man,
rank them that way.
Four of those guys have history with injuries.
They do.
I mean, Wentz, you know, when he was at South Dakota State or North Dakota State, where was it? North Dakota State? Yeah. Missed the majority of his final season there because of injury. Deshaun Watson missed an entire season at Clemson. J.J. Watt seems like he's missing a game or two every single year with the Houston Texans. And Andrew Luck, we know he really hasn't played any snaps the last 2 years. The most confident, I'm going to go Carson Wentz. And again, I think Carson Wentz will end up being the best quarterback in this league in the next couple of years. I think that's where he is projecting. So I'll go Wentz. I'm most confident. Then I will go Deshaun Watson, number two, J.J. Watt, number three, and Andrew Luck. I don't know what to believe. He's still not throwing footballs, Dunaway.
So you are still least confident of those four in Andrew Luck.
I think you have to be where he is in his career, and I'm pulling for him. Because I think when Andrew Luck's on the field and he's healthy, even without a great offensive line, he was still really productive and taking that team to the postseason.
Boy, Carson Wentz's injury was late in the year, though. To have him ready week one and to bounce back and have a big year? I mean, that was a late injury.
It was a first weekend of December, but it was a non-contact injury, and it didn't look that bad when it happened.
It didn't even look like he was hurt. You know, he was rarely do you see that injury when no feet are on the ground. He was in midair.
They're projecting he's going to be back week one. Now, the good news for them, the Philadelphia Eagles, if he's not, pretty good contingency plan, and Nick Foles, your Super Bowl MVP, but I believe he'll be back week one.
The housing market is hot. There are three times more buyers than sellers. It's more important now than ever to make sure you have your financing in place before you even find the house. Get pre-approved today at thehomeloanexpert.com. The Home Loan Expert, LLC.